You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Wednesday, so it's time for Wayne on Wednesday. Wayne McCurry is a portfolio manager at FNB Wealth and Investment in Johannesburg. And of course, the big news this week that the market is waiting for, it's always waiting for something, of course, Wayne, is inflation. Inflation in the United Kingdom rose from 2% to 2.2%. But that's what I keep on being told is because of base effects. And I do sort of understand that. Now, the United States, however, just drifted lower fractionally from 3% annually to 2.9% annually, more or less sealing the deal on an interest rate cut, Wayne.
Correct, yes. And it was very much in line with expectations. The month-on-month increase was 0.2%. So obviously, if you analyze that, you get it just over 2. Yeah. And that's very much sealed in a rate cut in September. But it probably eliminates an emergency cut unless some disastrous economic news comes out at some stage. And it also more or less puts to bed the chances of a 50 basis point cut. In other words, the Fed will be happy with this number.
Yeah, it needs to do it. It needs to be proactive, I think. So 25 basis points would be a nice gesture to the market. But 50 basis points would scare people, I think. They would say, well, you can see things in the future that we can't. The problem that the Fed's got is that since this figure was collated, because it's, the July figure, since then, the oil price has gone up because of geopolitical tensions in the Middle East and also between Ukraine and Russia. So there may be that base effect story that I spoke about with the UK. And the 2.9% might be the lowest for a couple of months. I mean, that's me being pessimistic.
Oil took a very brief trip down to 75 from 80 and 81. So, you know, next year, this time, there may be a bit of base effects, but not in the next couple of months, because oil was been hovering around the 80, 81, 82, in fact, even up to 85. So I think this fall down and the current rise to just above 80 won't really affect the inflation numbers hugely. What does affect the inflation number is this rental equivalent story. Yes. And that's going to continue to drop, even though it was stable in the last month. And it's last month has just come out now, because you're measuring essentially of a very high in long-term interest rate setting against a much lower one now. And as we know, with a bit of the scare we got in the stock market last week or whenever it was, the U.S. long bond is now below 4. So that even helps the inflation side, because a lot of that owner's equivalent rental story actually just your mortgage bond, which is affected by long-term interest rates. So this just slightly drifting lower doesn't change the trajectory of inflation at all, and the Fed will cut.
Yeah, and if you look at something as a bigger market as the euro-dollar exchange rate, it's gone through 110, currently 110.35, which is the highest the euro has been against the dollar for quite a while. I mean, it's a boring market. It's within a very well-defined band, but just pushing towards the top of that band at the moment for the euro, which means the dollar is under pressure. And that's, of course, helped the rand, 18.05. Very nice.
Yeah, and the rand's looking quite nice at 18.05. I mean, it's all dollar weakness. It's got not the rand per se. But you must remember, in the not-so-distant past, you know, it went up to 18.50. And, you know, it comes from 1930-odd. So it's quite a nice improvement in the rand value, actually. And I still think there's more to come. I think fair value is 17.50.
Yes.
And if all the factors come into play that will cause the rand to strengthen to there, in other words, lower interest rates and some sort of recovery in the commodity cycle, then the rand could well go lower than that. In other words, maybe down towards 17 or something like that, simply because it's done it every time.
It always overshoots, doesn't it, to the upside or the downside?
Both sides.
Mm. Correct. That's one of the great characteristics of the beloved currency.
Very volatile.
Yeah, exactly. Otherwise, since we spoke, what have you been seeing? It's been relatively quiet. There was only one set of results that really stood out for me and disturbed me somewhat, because of the amount of money involved when it came to impairments and headline earnings per share falls. And that was Sasol. Sasol?
Yeah.
Wasn't that a shocker? I mean,
no,
terrible.
I mean, but everyone knows this. Everyone knows this, and the market knows it. That's why the price has fallen from 400 Rand in mid-2022 to the 120, 130 where it is now. So that impairment and that, all those bad news already in the share price market knew all about this. And, you know, these impairments and that actually annoy me a little bit, because it always says, no, it's just a book entry. It's not a book entry. You're writing off money that you spent.
Yes.
You know, it's a real cost. It's not just a book entry. Of course, they can write it up again if chemical prices improve, you know, because it's just the way you value these assets is essentially the present value of future profits or future positive cash flows. And, of course, if you're in the bottom of a chemical and commodity cycle, those assets aren't worth what you're carrying them on your books at. But even if you ignore all of that, it's quite clear, and it's been known for a very long time, that their little foray into America has been a complete disaster. I mean, I don't know how much they've written off there. Is it 60 billion? Is it 80 billion rand? Is it 100 billion? Because this isn't the first write-off.
No.
And in fact, it almost brought the company to its knees, and they had to do that rights issue.
I spoke about this too.
What a catastrophe.
I spoke about this very matter to our dear friend David Shapiro on Monday, and I said, okay, for people that don't understand impairments, and when I said people, I meant me, because he's an accountant, and he talked about the book entry, the book entry phrase, which you just used, and I sort of understood it after he did it. But one of the things that I said to him was that surely this is gross mismanagement from successive board members. It's not the price of chemicals. It's not the price of the rand against the US dollar. And it's not the oil price. This is gross and reckless mismanagement, Wayne.
Yes. Yes. The plant they put in there cost them more than what they expected, took longer to come to start working than what they expected. And of course, in their calculations as to whether you can make a decent amount of return, that doesn't help spending more and taking longer till you actually get positive cash flows. But quite clearly, they didn't have enough of a safety margin in their calculations. And also quite clearly, they seem to have underestimated the prevailing chemical prices through the cycle.
Yes.
Because, you know, I mean, I'm also an accountant, as you well know.
Yes.
You know, you can massage numbers to almost look like anything if you really want to. So when you're looking at a capital project like that, and you know, let's take what's a good example? Let's take palladium as an example. You know, palladium can vary between $900 and $2,000 an ounce. Now, when you want to dig a palladium mine and you take a 20-year view, you say, what's the average price we expect over 20 years?
Okay.
Now, if you use 1,300, your project might just sort of break even. It won't be worth the risk. But if you use 1,600, your project prints money like it's going out of fashion. And of course, if you use 800 or 1,000 as the price, you lose money. You know, so you can, you know, pick the number that you want to use to justify your capital expenditure. And that's what's happened with Sasol. They've obviously just taken a number, and everyone, and you guess these things because you don't know the future. You're guessing these things. I mean, you can get in consultants and special people and pay them an absolute fortune, but they're just guessing what the future price of chemicals is going to be. And once again, it tells you the sad story, with a few notable exceptions, of South African companies going overseas and trying something and getting cleaned out in total. And lots of them had to run back to South Africa. Sasol is still there, but a lot of them had to run back to South Africa after really losing their shirts. And the notable exceptions are Bidvest, Bidcorp, and SA Breweries.
Yeah, the Bidvest Bidcorp is a very good example, because you can drive around any decent-sized Dutch town or city, and you see it there. And I think, actually, that's very nice to see. They've done so
and
well.
When you study their model, it was a simple model. I mean, Brian Joffe, you know, he knows business. It was a simple model. He didn't ever buy a fix-me-up like David Jones and, was it Burger? What was the one that... Burger one that famous brands bought in the UK?
It was Gourmet Burger Company.
gourmet burger. So he didn't buy a fix me up. Never did that. He bought a successful company with good management and paid his money for that.
Yeah.
And then he kept the management in place. He didn't replace the management and send South Africans out there to run an operation in a foreign country where you don't understand the environment or the consumer and the businesses and your competition and all of these things. That was the first thing he did. And the second thing, so he's only done two things. And the second thing, he never bet the farm. Always small acquisitions. And sorry, the third thing he did was, it was always in a service area that he understood. So there's your three rules. And when you look at what other companies did, the biggest mistake they make is they buy a fix-me-up. You know, I must fix this thing. Like a great buying New Look. They're going to fix New Look. You know, and you just get cleaned out, man. These are different environments with different consumers, different patterns.
Well, it's not just that.
Understand it, man.
It's not just that.
I mean, even
sorry, Wayne. But the Gourmet Burger Kitchen, not company, by the way. I got that wrong because I remember the then CEO of Famous Brands. What was his name? Hedwig or something like that. I can't remember his name. But anyway,
I can't remember.
He invited me to because I said I'm going to be in London. I'd just done an interview with him. He said, "Well, why don't you go to?" Gourmet Burger Kitchen, and the meal will be on me and everything. I said, well, no need for that, but yeah, I'll go there. And I went to it, and it was in just off Notting Hill in the Portobello Road. And I sat there, ate the burger, and I thought, yep, that's a nice burger. But there's nice burgers everywhere. It's nothing new. Okay, you've got this distribution network, and you've got a lot of shop fronts in a lot of high streets, and you're quite high profile. But there's nothing that distinguishes you. And I should have thought then to phone up a few people and say, listen, this is an over... They've overpaid for this thing.
Overpaid, yeah. Mm. You know, so Brian Joffe, you know, he knew exactly what he was doing. So even if something didn't work, and I don't think anything of his there was a problem, but even if it didn't work, it would be very small in his company's life because he never bet the farm. He never went big. And I mean, they're the simple reasons. But not just going to Europe and Australia and all of that. You know, there's lots of our companies that have gone into Africa thinking, okay, we understand Africa, got you. You know, we African, we know it. You have just been cleaned out as well.
Hmm.
I mean, you had Tiger Brands going to Nigeria. They were cleaned out. You had PPC. You also went into Nigeria Cement, and they were cleaned out. And I can bet you, MTN has had a good couple of thoughts about Nigeria as to why are we here, guys. Their currency just took a 96% collapse.
It's very interesting.
And there was Vodacom, is it in Ethiopia? Is it Ethiopia or Egypt? My memory is so bad, I can't remember.
It was Egypt, actually, yes.
Very similar thing. You know, it was Egypt, that's right. Very similar thing. You know, the underlying company is doing well. It's doing so great. However, the currency collapsed by 60%. So therefore, we're showing these big losses. And also, you know, when you go to these underdeveloped countries, there's no domestic credit market. There's no domestic note market. So you go there and you earn in the domestic currency. But all of your borrowings, because you can't borrow domestically, there isn't a credit market. There's no bond market. So all of your borrowings are either in USD or rands. And when that currency collapses, your liabilities don't collapse. So you're not matching your liabilities with your income stream in the same currency. And also because these are underdeveloped markets, you can't hedge against the currency collapsing. So you're going into a very financially unsophisticated market. And you just literally take pain. You know, so, you know, I think South African companies should just learn, chaps, if you're successful in South Africa, deal with your local competition, stay on top of the game here. And just concentrate where you know what you're doing and where you are successful.
I wonder if that's a South African trait. I mean, it's an ego thing, isn't it? We're whatever company it is, and you go out there and say, well, we're South African, we're doing so well, we can show you what to do.
We know our stuff. We know this game.
Yes.
And if you want to go somewhere, do what Whitey did with ShopRite. You know, open a few stores somewhere and just check out the scene.
Yes.
Just see what's happening. And then if it's a catastrophe, you say, okay, we lost a bit of money, guys, cheers. But if it's quite good, at least you've been there 4 or 5 years, your staff there know the business and the company a lot and the country a lot better. And then you can expand. But don't go there and buy something or go big. Just doesn't work. But anyway,
No, it doesn't. Anyway, otherwise, things pretty quiet. What else have you seen? I noticed the all share way above 81,000 again, having a dip below 80,000 Monday, Tuesday of last week. So that's a very smart recovery. Have you seen any other trends, Wayne? Resources slightly down today, but no great shakes. Platinum and palladium both below 1,000 by a comfortable margin as well.
Yes, comfortable margin, but at least palladium in particular has been going up the last couple of days.
Yeah.
But look, I mean, it's very volatile. It hit $1,000 not that long ago. I mean, Amplat share price hit 700 not that long ago. It hit 1,000 in December. So, you know, these things are volatile. They can move very, very quickly. Eh? They really can. So we'll just have to see on that. But one thing that did catch my interest.
Yes.
And it's a little company. It's a very small company now, but I've been looking at it for a long time now. And that's Home Choice. They came out with their results. They were good. I think this is a very nice little company that's really adaptive. I mean, a lot of their income comes from financial services, et cetera, et cetera. 80%, 90% of their sales are online. I don't say buy the shares. All I say is go and look at a bit of the history of this company. And from what I can ascertain, it's really nicely managed and the chaps do very well, et cetera, et cetera. So I thought it was nice reading their results. The other company for people who are interested in stock markets should go and read Bell Equipment and go and see what Bell Equipment's done when things really got tough. I mean, they're such a big employer in Richards Bay area, that when things were tough, they said, listen, we can either retrench 30% of our staff or we employ everyone, because, I mean, they're a big employer in Richards Bay. We employ everyone, but you take a 30% haircut and you can spend, you know, one day in four at home. You know, and when the company got into trouble, the shareholder family, the Bells, put in the money, they kept it going. And look, I'm not saying buy the shares. It's an extremely volatile company. If you're interested in markets and interested in companies, go and read Bell Equipment, going back the financial statements and disclosures.
But isn't Bell being taken off the market, Wayne? Isn't Bell delisting? Yeah. That was one of the sadder delistings. It was never very liquid. I mean, a company of the size of yours could never invest in it. It wouldn't make a difference to your portfolios. And Home Choice the same. I know the ex-CFO of Home Choice. He's a friend, and he's one of those very, very diligent young men who would never be cooking any books. He was, and he was happy with it, but he moved to the UK, so that was the end of that. But again, unfortunately, that would be for your personal portfolio a little bit of a punt, but not for FMB.
These are both small companies, yes.
Exactly. Wayne, because it's been very, very hot, I don't find the inclination to cook, you know. I flop around with my brow glistening because the Dutch cities are not made for extreme heat, 35 degrees. Yeah, exactly. So I've done nothing. Have you got any food stories for me?
Yes, I've got a nice food story that the world's biggest rugby fan.
Oh, yeah.
On Monday night, she made gourmet burgers for us at home.
Okay. Tell me what form these gourmet burgers took.
She went to Woolworths and bought their thick hamburger patty. So she didn't make the hamburger
patty. Oh, well, that's cheating.
She bought the thick
no, that's
no,
cheating.
Not really. Not really. They're very nice hamburger patties.
Mm.
But then she grilled the rolls under the grill in the stove.
There we go.
Grilled the burgers, the buns, nice and crispy, so that when you put all the sauces on it, it doesn't get soggy.
Oh, that was well done. Yes.
Yeah, she caramelized onions.
Oh.
She did bacon with it. She got some tomato that she just sort of lightly grilled the outside of the tomato on it. And then she made blue cheese sauce and bacon to go on top.
Did you have a side order of an angioplasty or something? Because that sounds as though that is an artery clogger, Wayne.
We had some jippies on the side, just to add to that, yeah.
So let me just recap this. You've got a shop-bought patty, toasted buns. Okay, it's fine so far. Tomatoes, slightly cooked, which is very good as well.
Caramelised onions.
You've got caramelised onions, which I applaud. But then it starts to go blue downhill with the bacon and the blue cheese sauce.
With bacon, it was totally and utterly delicious.
I'm sure it was, with the chips on the side. And the chips are shop bought, are they? Oven chips, are they?
No.
They
are bought, but the chippies, you put them in oil.
Oh, I see. Okay.
We've tried oven chips, and it just doesn't work. Somehow, they don't get crispy enough. It just doesn't work. You actually buy the skinny chips, so they're like shoestring chips, so not the big wedgies, the actual skinnies. And I must say, I'll compliment Woolies on this, although there are two instances that still have scarred me from Woolies, but we'll put that aside.
Well, that's the salt and pepper squid, right?
The salt and pepper squid and the peanut butter ice cream, but let's put that aside.
Yeah, let's move on from that one, yeah.
Let's move on now. That probably happened 10 years, if not longer, 15 years ago. But
it still festers, yeah.
It's fresh in my mind.
I can feel your pain.
Yeah. But they've got chips there that have got like a little coating on it. I don't know how to describe it. Maybe a little rub or something like that. But they come out super crunchy and very, very tasty. So they're actually very, very... So even though we do 80-90% of our shopping at Checkers, because it's so easy. You push a few things on your phone because you know what you're ordering, and the world's biggest has got the list. If you want something, put it on the list. But then when she's shopping and something's not on the list, you can't add anything.
You can't phone her up and say, or text her and say, I need...
You cannot go off list. So I go shopping by myself sometimes off list. Anyway, so she sits and she pushes the button, then ping pong, the stuff just arrives. And it's so, so convenient with Checkers. But we still get our chips from Woolies. We get not all of our meat, but probably 50% of our meat from Woolies. And if we do buy a cake, we probably share it 50% between Checkers and 50% between Woolworths, because we bought a Checkers cake last week. So what the world's biggest rugby fan did was, for the rugby, we got chips, crisps, packet crisps, and dips, biltong, and a cake.
And a cake.
So it was, we didn't eat it all at this in one sitting. In fact, there's still some cake left over now. But it was delicious, and it was a caramel cake from Checkers. It was really, really good.
So chips, biltong, dips and caramel cake.
And rugby, I mean, what could be better?
Well, I've got a couple of ideas, but I'll let that slide. There's a couple of things I want to know. Where is the list? Is it stuck to the fridge?
Stuck to the fridge. And good. If you go shopping, you know, in the old days where you actually used to go to a supermarket, and I used to go shopping with the world's biggest rugby fan, and you walk down an aisle and I saw something I liked and I would put my hand and touch it, and I would get
slapped.
That's not on the list. It's not on. So you can have whatever you want,
as long as it's on the list.
On the list.
Very interesting, Wayne. I'm getting so many insights into domestic bliss between you and the world's biggest rugby fan. My final question: that burger sounds like quite a stack. How do you eat your burger? With a knife and fork or with your hands?
Knife and fork, yeah.
Okay.
For whatever reason, I haven't got a clean hand fetish. I mean, my hands each day get absolutely filthy in the garage.
Yeah.
So I have not got a clean hand fetish. In fact, my poor son will wash his hands 30 times a day. I don't know how he picked it up, but he's got a clean hand fetish. but I do not have. However, I don't like touching food, either raw or cooked. So I don't eat my braai flakes chopped with my fingers. I don't do it. I eat with a knife and fork. For whatever reason, I don't like touching food with my hands.
What about, just again, I'm extending this now. What about then, say, a chocolate bar? You eat that with your hands, and that's food.
But chocolates isn't really food.
Because you've got a sweet tooth.
I eat with my hands. I've got a usually sweet tooth, but like spare ribs, I don't eat with my hands. I sit and diligently cut all the meat off with a knife and fork and then eat it.
You're complicated.
I don't know where I've got this from.
You're a complicated individual, Wayne McCurry.
It's actually quite strange because I don't really worry about my personal appearance, and you know, I'm not like Shapiro. I'm not like Shapiro. He's got branded clothes and branded watches, branded sunglasses and branded underpants, and all. I don't really worry about my appearance. You know, Shapiro's a very natty dresser. He's always well turned out. When he's got a tie, he's got a little tie clip on it, little gold tie clip with a little diamond in it. Yeah. He's a very natty dresser, and that doesn't worry me. So I'm not a fussy person. The only things I don't with that I cringe eating is bar one and broccoli and Brussels sprouts. You know, otherwise I'll chow just about, and anything with byproducts like tripe and that, I will not touch with a barge pole. But, you know, byproducts, I don't chow that. But otherwise, I'm not a fussy eater. But for some reason, I don't like touching food with my hands. I mean, if I'm cooking, I'll touch food, you know, put it in the pan if I have to and stuff like that. But most of the time, I'll use tongs to put the choppies in the pan. Yes. Even at a braai fest, I don't like touching food for whatever reason.
I'm sure there's a psychiatrist out there or a psychologist out there that could get to the root of this problem, Wayne.
Quite likely is something.
Okay, Wayne, we'll have to leave it there, unfortunately. Thank you very much for your analysis and your food insights. Wayne McCurry is a portfolio manager at FNB Wealth and Investment, and that was Wayne on Wednesday. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.